Hey, hey, and welcome to Stopping By. I'm Doug Pierce, Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor with Pinnacle Wealth Partners at UBS Financial.
And I'm Jess DeBeer, Associate Director and Senior Wealth Strategy Associate, also with Pinnacle Wealth Partners. We are located in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, and can be reached at pwp@ubs.com.
Our team's mission, our just cause, is to bring financial literacy and competency to the masses. We've been fortunate to meet interesting people along the way. They have compelling life stories about overcoming adversity and seeking their passions. Hopefully, you'll see that our guests are just like you. So Jess, who's stopping by today?
Doug, today we are chatting with Cliff Stein. He is the former general counsel for the Chicago Bears. Resonates with me. And an adjunct professor at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law. He is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services Incorporated, and his views are his own.
Ah, yes, our ubiquitous disclaimer. Jess, let's see who's stopping by.
Woo! Jess, you're so proud of me.
Yeah.
I made hot water with lemon.
For your recording voice? Oh, my.
Yeah. It's an old Hollywood trick, Jess.
Ah, because you're old Hollywood? What are you, like Humphrey Bogart? Let's talk about Jerry Maguire, considering our guest today.
Oh, very good. Ooh, segue.
I'm going to say something controversial. I didn't think it was a good movie.
Okay, well, everybody's entitled to their opinion, even if it's wrong.
I thought the acting was forced. I didn't feel everyone, except for Cuba Gooding Jr. The stuff at the end feels forced. I don't really feel like she does complete him.
Huh. I happened to just see that scene recently, the one where like he rushes back. And I like that. We had a big night tonight. I couldn't enjoy it because you weren't there. Come on.
I didn't buy it.
Okay. Wasn't for you. Hammer Crow. It won like offensive. Well, I think you brought that up because
of our guest.
Like Cliff's role. Yeah. I feel like when the actual job is probably less sexy than it really is. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's a couple scenarios that are really juicy, and the rest of them are like, well, this is your player, the selling in. It's very probably formulaic.
Has he only represented football players?
No. He actually represented a wrestler who got injured.
Like an Olympic wrestler, like a real wrestler, or like a fake wrestler?
First of all, they are both athletes. Some are more entertainers.
I used to watch Glow. Do you remember Glow? You were in diapers.
All right, Jess. The show continues with another NFLer stopping by. Mm. Jess, maybe you're in touch with the Kelce brothers. Maybe you need to pop into the Manning cast this season. Huh? Can you work on that?
I can work on a Kelce.
Hey-o. All right.
Sorry.
Folks. As Jeff mentioned earlier, Cliff Stein is a sports law attorney with 30 years of experience in professional football. Having worked for 8 years as an agent representing NFL players and 22 years working in the front office of the Chicago Bears, Cliff has had quite a unique background and perspective on the industry. During his tenure with the Bears, Cliff played a pivotal role in managing the team's salary cap and negotiated over $3 billion in player contracts. These contracts include Hall of Fame players like Brian Urlacher, Devin Hester, and Julius Peppers, to name a few. Recognized as a top expert in contract negotiations and salary cap management, Cliff now shares his knowledge as an adjunct professor at Northwestern Pritzker School of Law. All right, so Cliff, I'm a numbers guy. I'm going to go through the numbers with you. 30 years of sports law experience, $3 billion in player, coach, and executive contracts negotiated, 3,000 contracts reviewed, $300 million in sponsorship, license, and media rights negotiated. Trusted advisor to 6 NFL head coaches, 4 general managers, 2 presidents, we don't know, White House or NFL, and 2 board chairmen. Listen, volume up on this one. Let's welcome Cliff Stein.
Snaps.
Thank you. Thank you, Doug and Jessica. Really appreciate being on your show. I love that I'm able to stop by and I'm not just listening to stop by, that I'm on it. So it's surreal for me and an honor to be here. I'm excited for you guys. This is amazing.
We're big time.
Look out, Hollywood. Oh, listen, here's how you know we're big time, Cliff. I'm going to tell you. I have hot water and lemon that I'll be... No, Jesse, don't...
He thinks he's like Howard Stern. It's lovely to meet you officially in person, Cliff.
It's lovely to meet you. Your name is ingrained in my mind, of course. I've seen your name for years. So to see this side of you and how talented you are is just, I'm blown away.
Favorite guest ever. Is it because of Da Bears? Is that why?
You know what? That didn't even cross my mind, but that's just another added benefit of your versatility, your name. I'm glad you guys are doing this because I love it. I know a lot of people do it, but you make it real interesting that you cover so many things, not just finance, not sports, but just so many things.
Doug, I think this is official documentation that we have a listener.
That's at least one.
A listener.
All right. So Cliff, I want to know how you found your way. We all know the Bears gets a lot of attention, but you had to start somewhere. So tell us where you started and then how you got where you are and where you were.
Yeah. Well, first of all, when you give an introduction like that, my first reaction is, who is that? If I have a question about, I'm calling you guys, like, what should I do with the money? You know, like, so it's good to have people like yourselves in my life. And that when you think about all the things you do, you think about how grateful for all the people in your life that have helped you along the way and helped you get there. So when I was in law school, I thought I was going to be an environmental law attorney. That was my main interest. I started the Environmental Law Council at Temple University, which is where I went to law school. I took one sports law class. Everyone in that class, what I found was wanted to be a sports agent, and which I had zero interest in at that time. But when I came out, I did work for a mid-sized firm, union-side labor law firm, and it gave me exposure to many areas of law, which was actually a really good way to cut your teeth as a young associate. That gave me a lot of great experience. And then within probably the first month of being in the practice, September maybe of 2024, I got a phone call from one of my best friends growing up. It was a guy named Scott Rosen, who played football at the University of Maryland. His co-captain at Maryland was a player named Darren Drozdov, who at this time in 94 was a defensive tackle for the Denver Broncos. And he asked about if he wanted to talk to Darren about a legal issue. I ended up being able to help him. And shortly after being able to help him, he asked me if I wanted to be his agent. He was looking to make a change, and I was not an agent. And I knew that I had to become certified by the NFLPA. I was 2 years older than him. So I went and got that one. I had a meet with his father, who was very skeptical and a very tough guy, a former three-letterman athlete at Maryland himself. He had two questions. How old are you? And how many clients do you have? And I had a bad answer to both of them. So I knew my work was cut out. But I called John Langle, who also was an agent for some players, but a lot of coaches. And he was a labor law partner at Ballard Spahr, the law firm in Philadelphia. I called John and I asked for his help maybe to go in it with me, like co-agent, be a partner on this. And he really, his main goal was he just wanted to help me. So we used his office. I brought the father and Darren Drozdov up to his office and, you know, a high-rise building in Center City, Philadelphia. And that worked because he saw, you know, an experienced attorney along with me. And then a very short period of time, it was just me. John said, Cliff, you don't need me to be involved. Just you represent Droz. He's your client. And that started it from there. I was able to pick up other clients, and I did that for 8 years.
So do you have to be an attorney to be a sports agent, or can you be a sports agent without being an attorney?
No. So all you need, when I started, I don't even know if you needed a college degree. Now they look for a college degree and a postgraduate degree of some nature, but don't need to be an attorney. And half of the agents are not. And those that even are probably either didn't or are not practicing law. It's a tough business. It's a very tough business model. So you have, you know, 80% of the players with 20% of the agents.
Did you find that because you did have training in law, you were better equipped to be an agent?
As a young attorney, I heavily leaned on that as a selling point. What I was doing at the law firm, it was the law firm at the time, what I was doing for the union employees was a huge selling point for families and players of players and their families. I was the one getting a call. If you needed a will, I would get the call. I would draft you a will. Even if I didn't have one myself, I was drafting wills for people. If it was a speeding ticket, if it was a letter from a creditor, like a collections agency, I was handling all these things. So I was able to go to the athletes and their families and say, look, not only am I going to negotiate your contract and be there as a mentor and advisor for you, but if you have any legal issues that come up, this is going to be one-stop shop.
And when you think when I think sports agent, right? I immediately go to Jerry Maguire. I'm sure I'm not the first person to ever say this, right? I immediately go to Show Me the Money, something I think in my head often when I want to talk to Stephen Dunn about stuff, Show Me the Money. But I feel like, I'm guessing some of your clients have asked you to show them the money or have been diva-like clients or have been prima donnas. So did you have any specific strategies in dealing with these types of athletes?
The movie, first of all, the timing was great for me. It was 1996, and it was right when I started my career as an agent. So I related to so much of it. And I use it in my class now, different scenes, different messages.
Do you? Huh.
First of all, with athletes, you know, the key with players, teams, coaches, agents, it's building relationships. And to do that, you know, it's having strong values, adopting strategies that help build those lasting relationships, you know, being a good communicator, being authentic, being honest. They need somebody in their life that's going to be a mentor, a teacher, that's going to give them advice to motivate them, to bring out the best of them. No different than some of the things that you're doing for your clients. I was fortunate. Yes, you know, I would have loved to represent prima donna athletes because to me, that means that they're probably high draft picks or lucrative veterans, free agents. But that's not how I was doing it. So whether by design or not, my strategy was picking up almost all undrafted rookies. So these were guys that it was going to be very hard for them to make the team. They didn't ask for anything. They were very low maintenance. And if they made the team, they were excellent clients. So I was able to get, Bobby, about a dozen of them before my agency career stopped. And when I went to the team side, that were all undrafted. And they became amazing clients, but more importantly, amazing friends to this day. And so that strategy paid off. So it was less competitive because when going after the fish was very expensive. And a lot of times you'd waste a lot of time and energy and resources and come in second place.
Okay. So you go from being an agent and then you become general counsel for the Bears, Chicago Bears. So what led you to the NFL and to the Bears specifically?
So over that 8-year period of time that I was working as an attorney and agent, I built up relationships with coaches, general managers, scouts, and I had signed a couple of players to the Bears, probably lower level players or practice squad players, but it enabled me to build a relationship with the general manager, who's Jerry Angelo. He's the general manager. I go to a Howard University versus Hampton College game. And Jerry is there when we meet at halftime to have just a cordial conversation. And he started to take a liking to me. And he asked me during that conversation, he said, did you ever think about working on the team side? Which I had not. And I thought nothing of the question. And then maybe a month after that, I was talking to him on the phone and he said, you know, I'm really disappointed in you. And I said, why? He said, because I'm interviewing for a contract negotiator position and you didn't put your name in the hat. And I said, Jerry, I don't know what position you're talking about. This wasn't like a posted position.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I have two people from the management council. Would you like to be the third candidate? So I said, yeah. And I went back and told my wife and I said, this is going to be great material for me as an agent. I'll be get to tell players that I interviewed with the Bears, never thinking that I would have an opportunity to get the job. The one thing I think that Jerry did, which was unique with me, first of all, I think he took a huge risk because I didn't come from a big law firm. I wasn't a corporate attorney. I had never worked in-house before. I'd never worked at the management council. So I didn't have the typical training ground and he didn't care. Like he wanted someone that was going to build successful relationships with the agents. And his strategy was to take someone that was an agent to be a negotiator. And he wasn't even thinking about the possibility of like the general counsel role, which I thought about early.
One of the things that's interesting, Cliff, I've known you for a long time. And so like, you don't tend to Google those kind of people. And so I'm Googling, researching, and I come across articles labeled you the salary cap guru. Mm-hmm. If you call it a guru in any world, it's awesome, right? So what does that mean for football, a salary cap guru?
It was really media generated in my opinion, but things like, you know, guru, expert, whiz, I mean, these are all words that come to people that have champions and advocates in their lives. You know, none of us will get anywhere in the jobs that each of you had and your clients have. It's not because they promoted themselves. Of course, you have to do that. You have to sell yourself, but you won't get anywhere in life without champions and advocates. So I was super fortunate to always have that. And if that's what I was considered when it came to salary cap management, contract negotiations, building agent relationships, it's because that I had champions that were positioning me that way, in this case, probably to the media. You know, and it's like no different than I firmly believe in each of you as financial planners, as financial advisors, and your firm. And by telling enough people about you, you are now both gurus.
And we didn't ask you to say that.
But that's how it works. And that's what I've done.
Yeah.
And that's why you got guests on your show, because we champion each other.
Let's talk about those contract negotiations, because you're working with players and team personnel. Were there any specific moments in terms of those contract negotiations that stand out as being particularly difficult or more creative?
So many of them, and they're so hard to really pin down one, and then some you probably can't even talk about, but like,
those are the ones we want to talk about.
Yeah.
Nobody's listening. About.
Nobody's listening. Yeah,
it's just us.
No doubt. I don't want to get sued. The three that pop up, well, you know, obviously when I came in, the player who we knew at the time was a future Hall of Famer was Brian Urlacher. And, you know, I was faced with the challenge to get immediately started on a long-term extension for the face of the franchise. That was very intimidating. As much as I was, you know, representing these undrafted rookies, I had not negotiated a contract of any significance before I came to work for the Bears. I mean, I obviously did a lot of negotiating, a lot of legal stuff, but nothing amounted to that level. So I had to really, really be on my game. And within a year after starting, I was negotiating what ended up being a 9-year contract for
wow.
a favorite franchise, a future Hall of Famer, who only had like one extension on that and retired as a Bear. So, and he was never at any time during his contract, he was never the highest paid at his position. So I really appreciate the process that was difficult, because I had to be that person that had to say no to some of these players that no one really ever said no to. I had another situation where we signed going into our Super Bowl year. We needed a strong tackle, offensive tackle, and we ended up signing as a restricted free agent, John Tate. And a lot of strategy had to go into constructing an offer sheet that it was with the Kansas City Chiefs at the time. And we had to construct an offer sheet that they couldn't match. At the time, they called it a poison pill, but I had to front load it in a way where they didn't have cap room to match it, but we could absorb it. And so we brought it all the way up to the deadline. And it was like a midnight or New York midnight, 11 o'clock Central Time deadline. And I remember like we were getting really close and I was typing it up and I had the agent and the player in the building. And we were running out of time, and I was so like worn out that they found me in my office, actually like passed out. And they found the trainer to put an IV in me and revive me. And I had about an hour to get back on my computer and put the deal together. And when the player came in, he saw me with a towel. My hair was wet, a towel around my neck. And he said to the agent, it was Ethan Locke. He said, Ethan, what did you do to this guy? I think that, hey, you got to have strong core values. And I think doing an assessment, a reflection on your own core values periodically is so important. You got to make sure they're aligned with your leaders, the people you work for, the organizational values. You know, I never took a day for granted. I always reminded myself of that. I didn't just say it, but I knew that there were hundreds, if not thousands, of very talented people, not only wanting my job, but physically actively trying to get it, because I would hear about it every day. So I never took a day for granted. Be a strong communicator is so important, because when you don't communicate, negativity fills that void.
Yeah.
You know, people go to a dark place. Like, why didn't they include me? Why didn't they respond to me? I never wanted to be that person. And ultimately, just be a good teammate. You know, like be somebody that people yeah. want on your team, that they want to be around. Be supportive. Be empathetic. Help people solve their problems, not only at work, but in their life. You know, that's what a good teammate does.
And I think a lot of this leads into my next question about networking. I mean, as a newer financial advisor, they tell you, go out there and network. Like, what the heck is that? they didn't realize it's another skill of learning about. And I'm sure for someone like yourself, like just how you got to the NFL, that's what you were doing. You have a philosophy for it?
So I call it your professional ecosystem, and I've divided it into three tiers. Tier one are your champions and advocates. You can have a lot of friends, but not all your friends are advocates and champions. All your advocates and champions are your friends, but not all your friends are, because an advocate and champion is someone that's not jealous.
Yep.
They're not competing with you. They want to see you do well, and they're happy, and they don't ask for anything in return. With all the tiers in your professional ecosystem, you want to see how you can shift them all to tier one. Tier two would be people that you know. They could be friends, they could be colleagues, they could be people that are out there, but you haven't gained enough of their trust. You haven't gotten invested in the relationship enough for them to be your champion advocates yet, but they can be. Mm. And then the tier three would be people that are not in your life, that you want to be in your life, that you can connect with, and you could be deliberate about over a period of time. Like I tell coaches all the time, every time you have a game is an opportunity to build your tier three of networks and hopefully make them into tier one. The week leading into the game, look at the staff of the other team. Look at the roster. Set up a meeting or text or pregame meeting with someone that you don't know that maybe one day could help you, maybe you could help them, but add them into your network. And maybe now they become a tier two that you stay in contact with enough. But eventually that person might be championing you for a job on their team. Try to get as many champions and advocates. But if you make a list, because most of us know in our head who they are, but we haven't looked at it on paper. And maybe you realize, like, there's more I can do here. Because to me, that is the primary ingredient of success. It's how I got to where I am.
This is excellent career advice.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, not that I want to switch careers. I'm just saying the three tiers, find your champion. I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, that can apply to any area of life, but particularly to your professional life. Let's talk a little bit about Negotiation Whisperer. Tell us a little bit about this company that you've started. And then I also want to talk about the fact that just the words Negotiation Whisperer, right? It evokes a Zen-like calmness. And I think a lot of people probably have an image that in order to be a really good negotiator, you have to be like a bully and you have to browbeat people, which seems like the opposite of this. So talk to us a little bit about it.
The day after I left the Bears, this popped into my head immediately because I knew that when I wasn't the frontline negotiator, I was in someone's ear behind the scenes, providing strategic advice and counsel to make good decisions, whether it was in a negotiation or just good business decisions. Maybe it was life decisions. As a lawyer, maybe it was legal counsel. And I always felt even more comfortable doing that than I was even like the center of attention. So that immediately came to me that there's something there as a mentor and guide. And so I set up the LLC knowing that I wanted to be a mentor and coach. I wanted to be a teacher. It's always something I wanted to do, but didn't have the time to, and not really fully defining everywhere that could go, other than I was passionate about negotiating and I was passionate about the style. There's two types of negotiating. There's competitive negotiating and then there's cooperative negotiating. For the competitive part, you really don't need anybody to teach you anything. You don't need to really even be skilled. The pure example of that would be when you go into a car dealership and you want to buy a car. You're just there trying to get the best offer and you're going to walk out if you don't get it. That's how I dealt with a lot of agents who are competitive negotiators, because by nature, they are more recruiters and salespeople than they are negotiators. Hmm. And when you are not skilled in negotiation, if that's not your area of expertise, you might revert to an area of just being insecure, which converts to being a competitive negotiator, where you are that vision, the browbeater. And that's not the style that I teach. I teach about a cooperative negotiation style. There is a lot of calmness. I've studied pilots and surgeons as really the two private sector jobs that every day they go to work, someone could die if they make a mistake. you know, they have a calmness to them. So I'm trying to bring that into negotiations. I mean, studies show there's more success, a higher rate of success in closing a deal when you meet with someone in person, when you meet with someone over a meal. There's a higher rate of success, and this is done in other cultures more than in ours, when you negotiate over a meal that you share, pizza. Building the relationship is so key, and obviously in sports, but many other professions, the long-term relationship matters. So you can't just win at all costs, use all your leverage, and not care about what that does to the relationship. And being a negotiator for a sports team, I always had to have front in mind that not only am I building and trying to establish a long-lasting and trusting relationship with the agent, but the player, he's ours. Like, we want to come out of this that he feels good.
Play with this guy. You got to share a locker room. And Yeah. So I would imagine, Cliff, that part of your job now is really educating people about that. Because I think if you have a common misconception about this, it's like, no, this is, you have to actually, which is why I guess it's helpful that you're teaching, because you're explaining, no, this is the philosophy and this is why it's successful. There's science to back this up. I would imagine that whole part of your process.
I divided it up into four sections: parties, rules, preparation, planning, and then you're ready for the negotiation. We look at all of that and how it impacts, because one of the mistakes that are made by a young early negotiator or people that do these negotiation competitions is they think that they can just grab a comparable player and say, we should make more than this player. But what they're failing to realize is behind every deal is a set of circumstances. I mean, is Dak Prescott the best player in the NFL, the best quarterback in the NFL? But he is by far the highest paid player in the history of the NFL. What were the set of circumstances that led to that value? And that's what I'm trying to teach them, that there's so many other things when it comes to the emotions, the coaches and GMs that are on the hot seat, the being one player away, the time pressures of the season starting, the allocation of resources that they may have with other positions. So there's so many things that we break down, but the relationships are such a critical.
Yeah. Is this something that you've passed down to your kids? Like, really, you could negotiate anything in your life, right? Everything. I mean, my kids try to negotiate with me all the time. And when they were little, I would say, there are things that are negotiable, there are things that are not negotiable. Like, I don't want to take swim lessons, not negotiable. You have to know how to swim. So is this something that you've passed on to your kids, and have they applied it in their lives?
You're 100% correct that you've been negotiating your whole life and sometimes doing it at a subconscious level.
Yeah.
And then when you bring it to a conscious level, if you incorporate some of these things, you actually may have less arguments. You may find that there's times where you're going to let them get to some wins.
Yeah.
So win the overall war, but and let them win some of the battles. I try to always instill a sense of calmness. I give them all the techniques that I use with meditation and cold plunging so that they understand that there's a time to take a breath and step back. You got to do that in every type of controversy, even if it's, you know, your child that's going to get mad at you eventually, Jessica, like it's going to be whether they want to stay out later or they want a phone or they want the car. Or you're nervous that they're going to be driving the car for the first time on the highway. And you're going to have to pick and choose the ones that are most important, because that way you'll enable yourself to really build trust.
Trust. Yeah. I also think if you give them some of that leverage, like, for example, hey, this is a special night for you. Do you want to take the new car? That also builds that trust with them too. Are you taking notes, Doug?
I would imagine that it wasn't until these moments where you realize, like, no, you're... This isn't just something you do until they get old enough to regulate. Like, you're constantly doing this. You're just sort of tweaking the dials a little bit.
It starts when they're infants. Like, they cry and then you show up and they stop crying. That's a negotiation tactic. All of these things in the way you relate to your family apply in the real world and the business world.
Well, let's talk about our coach, Steve Goldman. You've known Steve for many, many years. Do you have a favorite or a most juicy Steve Goldman story we can share?
Steve is just, he's such a legend. You know, he's an icon. I mean, there's no one like him. I have to go back when I first met him. I'm a new agent, really unproven, no clients. You know, I'm a recent graduate of Temple Law School. and trying to, as much as I can, network with any coach at any level that will talk to me, trying to figure out how do I get a client. And Steve Goldman is the offensive coordinator at Temple University, but he had the time for me. And 99 out of 100 coaches would have not spent that amount of time with me. And not only did he, you know, I find out that, you know, the guy's a former head coach of the CFL. You know, he coached and mentored Hall of Fame players. You know, this guy is like, to me, like this was a living legend in football. He knew so much, but he would set up a regular cadence of calls with me. I was representing maybe some Temple players at the time, and he was instrumental in me getting introduced to them, like Henry Burris, who's been on your show. And you get all the inside information from Steve in terms of the character, the player, the coachability. He had a strong perspective on what life was as a coach, as a player in the NFL, the agent business. So it didn't surprise me. I mean, we never would have guessed it, but it didn't surprise me that he would go on, you know, to have success in another industry, which is crazy, but he did.
All right. So finally, we have our two favorite questions that we ask all of our guests. What is your earliest memory surrounding money, and how has money impacted your life?
Yeah, great question. I had a paper route when I was 9 or 10 years old. But when I saw that there was a paycheck that wasn't allowance coming from anyone in my family, that was impactful. That motivated me throughout my teens to keep always having a job. You know, look, money is, you got to learn to respect it, to love it, you know, appreciate its power, but also don't be consumed by it. It's fun to play the lottery and dream. But for me, it was always about just, do I have enough to provide for my family, to help my children accomplish their dreams, get a good education, spend quality time with your family. And like you guys always taught me, make sure you have enough in case of an emergency. I try not to get too obsessed and intoxicated with it, because mm-hmm. we all know that, you know, the richest people in the world die of the same diseases that we do. There's a lot of unhappy people that have a lot of it. And so you got to still stick to your core values and use it to your advantage if you have it, but don't lose who you are. Don't be someone else, and don't expect different treatment because you have it.
Wow. Doug, I have learned so many things today. Okay. I have written notes. I want to just say that, Doug, since you are one of my tier one people, you're one of my tier ones. I think we need to, I don't know, have pizza and you can show me the money.
You need to hone her craft a little bit better, right?
That was first my first attempt.
We'll get better. We'll get better.
Cliff,
I want to thank you. You have been a champion and an advocate for us. You have helped us, introduce us to people, many of whom are really just fun people and nice people. And we can't thank you enough. Sitting down and doing this for us, it's a big get for us.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time. I appreciate your knowledge. I appreciate your process. You basically have created a flow chart for success. And I think that's really awesome.
Thank you for being part of my life.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, man.